Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you for joining us once again. And we will pick up where we left off yesterday, I suppose. But first, before we do that, let's remember that just because we talk about some tax rules or tax strategies, and we talk about some syndicated private real estate partnership information or projects or opportunities, that you really should consult with your own existing advisors before you take any action on anything that you hear us discussing. And I know you hear other shows talk about this, but they're usually selling a membership, and I never hear them bring up the prospect of running the need for a membership by your advisors. But I'll just tell you, for those of you that may be listening that are contemplating joining one of the investor or mentor platforms that work in the private real estate partnership space, typically multifamily is what you're going to find close at hand here in Houston, you don't really need to do that. There's reasons you might do it, and I'm happy to give you my two cents on that. I've been a member of both of the larger platforms that we have based here in Houston, and I can opine extensively on some of the pluses and minuses of each of those platforms. So if you don't have existing advisors, yes, you're welcome to contact us. The best way to do that is to go to our BAPlannerShow.com website. That's BAPlannerShow, just like it sounds, .com. And if you'll look there under the title on the homepage, you'll see five links, I believe it is, if I recall. And the two on the right are the ones that you want to explore. The forms links, or link, the link to the forms, those are our intake forms. Just fill out at least step one, the client profile. That'll give us enough to have a phone call, which you can schedule at the link right next to forms. It's the link furthest to the right on that homepage. But in any event, I mentioned we're going to pick up where we left off on yesterday afternoon show. I've got a few more articles that all have good news or bad news, but it's news that helps me illustrate a point or talk about a certain facet of our economy that affects our commercial real estate space. It's amazing what's going on currently in our world, so to speak. But in any event, so speaking of the BAPlannerShow.com site, if you want to follow along and see the articles or maybe come back to them later when you have more time, you can do that by going to BAPlannerShow.com and go to the Resources tab up at the top of our page there, and then click on the news link that will come up if you hover over that resources tab, and you'll see oodles and oodles of news articles. And I try to give you a link to get to the article. Some of the articles are free, some of them are paid. If you got to have, for instance, a Wall Street Journal subscription or I can't remember if I've got maybe a Bloomberg article or two. Kiplinger is a free one. Some of these sites like Globe Street, which is one of the better real estate, commercial real estate tracking sites. They do a lot of studies on commercial real estate, and they promote webinars, seminars, things like that. It's a great site for keeping up with current commercial real estate news. Anyway, that one is free, but it requires a registration. So I try to indicate that on, you know, with some asterisks out to the right of each title. And I apologize for, well, two things. One, I copy previous articles oftentimes as a tool to very quickly format typeface, etc., coloration, and so forth. As I update the page, and sometimes I forget to go tweak the number of asterisks, and then also sometimes I forget to change the link on the article that I copied to use its formatting. So you just have to bear with me. If you ever need to find an article and the link doesn't take you there, just copy that article into your URL address window up at the top, and you'll be fine. You'll find it, I'm sure. In any event, so the first article I'm going to bring up is the one about the new jobs report. 303,000 jobs blow through expectations. This is the March report. And the subline subtitle there is, "This seems like more data that will give the Fed to put off rate cuts." I think they left a word out there, but anyway, we get it. In fact, I was just talking about this a week or two ago when I said if we get any more job reports like we had in February or January, we're not getting rate cuts anytime soon. And I would suggest to you at this point, I believe Jamie Dimon has it right in his letter to the shareholders that he sent out recently. And that reminds me, I still need to put that up here on the site. I am going to do that when we take our first break, assuming I can put my hands on that. But in any event, the overall market's too hot, as they say. You know, they can't, if they lower interest rates as the employment or the new jobs are taking place, it's going to cause more inflation. And I don't know, that's what's got us into this mess in large measure to begin with. But you know, I guess we'll see. And I also, as I mentioned yesterday on the show, that you know, 7 or 8% mortgage rates, I think Jamie Dimon expressed the likelihood that interest rates still have a ways to go up. He said mortgage rates will probably get to the 8% level eventually, if not soon. And I guess if that's the case, it's, you know, it's going to take even longer than what we might have thought back in December and January. So in any event, you know, the other issue is not just the number of jobs. It's the fact that, let's see, it says it somewhere in this article, I believe. Oh, yeah, first paragraph. Average hourly wages over the last 12 months are at a 4% gain, much higher than actual inflation, let alone the 2% target. So it's making for a hazier picture of what this might mean for rate cuts later this year is the conclusion. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, these jobs reports, it seems like they're constantly getting restated. And, you know, you hear or see the original announcement in the news. You don't see a whole lot of the restatement articles And, you know, that didn't make the politicians look good, typically. But in any event, you got to get back. At some point, you got to circle back around. And let's see. I was just looking for an article. Oh, here it is. There's an article back in November. Or was it November? No, it was January. I'm looking at it now. That says initial U.S. employment reports overstated by 439,000 jobs in 2023. That's pretty significant. That would have wiped out a couple of months' total jobs, right? That's a big number. And that would mean that the job market is not as healthy as the government suggested. Well, you know, that's, I think, the suspicion a lot of people have every month when we get these numbers, especially, well, it's under any administration, but this one seems to have a really high propensity to skew the news. Any kind of economic news that's positive, this group takes it and expands it by twice, typically. You know, it's like they talked about it wasn't their fault as inflation was going up, prices were going up, but boy, were they first in line to take credit the first time they took just a slight dip headed down. And I love watching the press secretary, Corrine, do her job, where, boy, you would think, you know, the administration is all over anything that's good, except the border, except the wars, except all that stuff. And then it's somebody else's fault. It's their predecessor's fault. You know, here we are, what, 3 years out, and they're still blaming Mr. Trump for some of the problems. And yet they're also slyly bringing back some of his policies and acting like, well, you know, we're doing it, but we're doing it for different reasons. We're doing it for wholesome reasons, but in any event. One thing I wanted to point out with this, and they mentioned it here in this this article, that the strong job growth, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a bad thing if you're waiting for inflation to drop, but strong growth is a sign that the economy is maintaining strength, quote unquote. And, you know, that's not a bad thing, according to Steve Rick, chief economist at True Stage. You know, this month's job, a strong job growth is a sign the economy is maintaining strength, and we expect the Fed to react accordingly by continuing to pause until the second half of 2024. But that is largely because they expect unemployment to rise later this year, which, not so sure about that, but looks to me like it's inching lower as we go. The unemployment rate was very close. Well, it was 3.8% as of end of March. So it's not good news if you're someone looking for inflation to recede. It's probably great news if you're a saver and you've got money in treasury bills, treasury bonds, and even bank accounts. I think I've seen some money market accounts, probably not at traditional banks. I can't remember if they were some type of private equity funds, but I'm pretty sure I saw rates of 5% on money market, or maybe they were CDs, I believe. I can't remember. I just remember thinking, man, you might not have to get out of bed in the morning if you can get enough of those type instruments lined up. But anyway, let's do this. We're right on the mark to take our first break. Let's go ahead and do that, and I'm going to see if I can find that Jamie Dimon letter or article and get that up on the site here real quick.
People always coming up to me and asking what your secret is. With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. Here's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. Nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I wanna be. Big dreams and big dreams. And there are many just like me
with big dreams and big dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And let's talk about Mr. Jamie Dimon's shareholder letter. I put a USA Today article up from earlier this week. And this is not an article that mentions his 8% forecast on the interest rate. I'm sure I can find another one, but I think it's this article has some good points in it right from his letter, apparently, or so USA Today claims. He spoke on international politics and argued that the U.S. should strengthen its place as the world economic leader. I think a dig at the current administration. It should be taking that away. Dimon said 2023 was a strong year for the economy in the letter published Monday, so it was this past Monday, as it brought in $162 billion in revenue. I'm not sure what he's measuring, because I would say that... for the company. I'm sorry. I've got to get some new glasses, or maybe clean these would get me there. But okay, strong year for the company. Yeah, I'd say for one bank in revenue now, not in assets. That's a pretty good number. But despite the company's successes, Dimon called this a pivotal moment for America and the free Western world. I tell you what, if that were the president of a small local or regional bank, those words might seem a bit hollow, but coming from someone with Jamie Dimon's stature and status, that's a pretty powerful statement. pivotal moment for America and the free Western world. And I guess he's looking at the calamity we have going on around the world collectively. And, folks, it hadn't been any worse in my lifetime. I can't recall any time, Cold War or otherwise, where we had the current ongoing devastation and what potentially may get much worse. You know, Iran is making noises about attacking Israel now. And, of course, if that happens, who else do you think is going to be in on that skirmish, right? It's going to be us. It's going to be our young, our children. And, you know, it's I don't know. And they were worried about Orange Hair Man, you know, getting us into these kind of wars. And, you know, it looks like that China is making some very aggressive moves, not just towards Taiwan. That we knew about. That's clearly likely going to happen. But they're shooting Philippine fishing boats with water cannons after they built some fake islands in the South China Sea to expand their territorial borders. And the Philippines don't much like that. They're probably wishing they didn't kick us out, our bases, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago? And I suspect we'll be involved whether we, you know, want to or not, and whether we can afford it or not. Now do you understand, I would suggest, to all the liberal and progressive spenders we have in Congress, you know, think back. Almost 3 years ago, let's see, it's just over 3 years ago now, when, or no, it was not quite 3 years, when Biden was trying to slam through the Build Back Better legislation. Thank goodness that Mr. Joe Manchin and Ms. Kristen Sinema put a roadblock up to keep that bill from getting passed out of the Senate. And I remember Manchin justifying his position. And truthfully, Mr. Manchin usually is good for talking tough until he does a vote count and realizes, oh, the Democrats won't win this vote if I don't flip in the end. And that's usually what he does. This is the only time I can recall. And I've watched him for a while, and I've heard even other congressmen. I remember Ted Cruz on a podcast once said, you know, Joe's a great guy. Everybody loves to go on his sailboat down the Potomac. You know, apparently he lives on his own sailboat there in Washington. And but he said, we've all learned that once the vote comes, if the Democrats really need his vote, he's going to flip and he's going to vote with the party. Well, finally, that did not happen. And I don't know, y'all probably weren't glued to the news cycle on the Build Back Better as I was for a while there, when it was touch and go on some of the provisions they were putting in that would have affected what I consult on for a living. But in any event, he said, look, we have no idea what's coming down the road here, and we should not be spending right to the edge. Every extra dime we collect, we shouldn't be trying to spend it. And of course, we're not spending the dimes. That's the problem. If we collect a dime, we're spending a dollar, and that's why we're in the sad state of affairs we are with our budgets and our cumulative deficits. But in any event, you know, I at the time I thought, well, that's a good story if you'll stick to it. I just didn't expect he would, but he did. And I'm glad we didn't fall for that. And then we, you know, because we fell for some other things, the Inflation Reduction Act and the green, all the green spending, I believe, was part of that act, and others. And now you see, you know, in spite of Biden, it's like Biden forgets the lies that he tells on how much he's cut the deficit. He seems to be laboring under the misconception that he's cut the deficit by $2 or $3 trillion with legislation, when in fact our deficit this year, and as far as the eye can see, or 10 years, by 2034, we will average average $2 trillion deficits each year, okay? We've done anything but cut. I think what Biden gets confused about is, you know, he was dreaming, I believe, at one point of cutting the deficits. You know, 8 or 9, 10 years out, I mean, that's how the typical crowd in Washington thinks. They want to take credit for fast-tracking those cuts, and even though they're not going to happen till down the road, if ever, and that's the problem. For all the talk and all the bloviating that goes on with Congress when they do pass legislation and they're trying to convince us public that, there's adequate papers in this legislation to cover the cost. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And anybody that believes that, you know, I don't know what to say about that. It's beyond, it's just not possible. It's not feasible. They've yet to pass an act that paid for itself, number one, and that cut anything. And, you know, we might get cuts at some point if we tie it to, to say that you can't run for re-election unless you've managed to balance the budget on time in a given period. I mean, if you tied it to their hold on power, maybe it would happen. But in any event, we're in a sad state of affairs when it comes to the deficit. And we'll talk more about that momentarily. In any event, a Diamond's letter to pick back up, we talk about, that America needs to continue with whatever dominance it has, which he says requires a robust economy to back the military. Not cuts to the military, but more military. And he said in the free and democratic Western world, and in fact for many other countries, there is no real or good alternative to America. The only other potential superpower is China, Diamond wrote. America is still the most prosperous nation on the planet, which not only can guarantee our military strength, but also positions us to help our allies develop and grow their nations. Because who does everybody turn to when the going gets tough or when they get attacked? And you can rest assured the U.S. is going to get that call. And this is where I think Diamond, he's probably got to be careful exactly what he says, but I think he's on to very salient points here. He says, we slept while China bolstered economic power. And he doesn't have to say it, but they bolstered that navy of theirs, far more ships than we have. Not that the raw count necessarily means dominance, but it doesn't hurt. And, you know, they've also got the ability to spy like nobody else, it seems. I mean, how often do we turn around and find a Russian folk have infiltrated our databases, even our own government's databases? It's crazy. And but in any event, Diamond evoked the post-World War II ideal of, I don't know if that's Pax Pro Americana, quote-unquote, to argue that America's hegemonic power is the best option for relatively widespread peace and prosperity. And it is necessary that the country maintain its position. It's the Reagan doctrine, right? Reagan was a big believer in a strong military will keep a strong peace. May not be the most palatable way to reinforce power, but having the hammer or the upper hand in conflict will go a long way towards keeping the peace, because people question, why would we want to get hurt? It's like I remember, was it Mike Tyson that had the saying that, you know, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the nose. And that's when your plans don't necessarily go the way you hoped. And I think that to the extent you have that capability, let's just say I'm glad to be an American. And I'm sure most of you are too. Let's see. He said that it's a... It's unfortunate we underestimated China's economic prowess. And it's a valid point that the Western world, both government and business, essentially underestimated the growing strength and potential threat of China, the letter states. It's also true that China has been comprehensively and strategically focused on these economic issues, all while we slept. And let's suggest that they also, I'll tell you what they didn't focus on. You know what China didn't focus on? They didn't focus on the woke issues, the military. Their military, I don't think, has any diversity training or LGBTQ training. Their hiring criteria is not based on all of the above. And I shudder to think who's going to be more prepared. You know, I think about our existing leadership. I remember when General Miley called his Chinese counterpart to warn him that, I forget the event that happened here, but it would be assumed that China would be worried that maybe we were getting ready to let loose with some missiles or make an attack. And Miley called them to tell them, oh, no, we're going to warn you when that happens. Don't worry. I don't recall any warning calls coming when the spy balloons were set loose to come over the U.S. Did you? I didn't see any stories about that or hear General Miley thanking the cohort in China, his equivalent, for keeping him in the loop. Of course not. That's because that's not how military should function. And it's scary to think that the two we've got in the most prominent position. I just saw some comments by the Secretary of Defense Austin, formerly General Austin, basically trying to dictate policy to Israel in terms of their ceasefire. And it's like, first of all, we could probably outsource 90% of our military to China because they get it done. They're very successful military. And they're also not worried about having a woke military. And second of all, you know, have you looked at a map lately, General Austin? Have you looked at who Israel is up against and how they've managed to successfully fend off their enemies? Got them on all sides except the, is it the Red Sea that's on the western border? And yet that's where Hamas attacked back in October. And so, they came from the water, not from the land. But in any event, I think we Americans should let Israel tend to business. And I understand killing is a terrible thing. I also understand that Israel didn't ask to be attacked, and that Israel has, I think, shown immense patience over the years with the Palestinians and their associates, to where it doesn't seem there's any change. I mean, you hear the kids being taught from very young ages, death to America, and, you know, more killers, or, you know, killers beget more killers. And the only solution is to eradicate that area of the population. And it's sad, it's horrible, but until that's done, you'll never reduce or terminate the reoccurrence. And I don't know. I think if Israel's shown an immense amount of patience and tried to do the right thing, and I don't know. I don't think it's America's place to dictate to Israel how they go about. And by the way, I saw a couple military folks speak up here over the last week or two and said that we did a lot more to our enemies after 9/11 in terms of killing than Israel has done to Hamas. And I don't know. It's always it's never what's good for the goose is good for the gander when we're the gander, I guess. But in any event, Diamond's saying, hey, we need to fix these issues. He says the threat comes from three angles. First, the over-reliance on China and the supply chain. Second, relying on potential adversaries for rare materials and supplies critical to national security. Industries like pharmaceuticals and electronics. Third, weakening other countries' economic positions and making them reliant on adversaries as a result. And he's got a great point. I mean, on the one hand, China's got a couple $1 trillion of our debt, so they sure don't want to necessarily see anything bad happen to us. Where will they offload $2 trillion? I mean, there's talk abounds now of having the currency standard that all the countries look to be changed from the dollar to something else. The problem is, what are you going to do with all the dollars? It's a wonderful two-barreled gun. You know, you got one point in one direction and the other the back towards you. And if you're China, making the point that, hey, we need to get off the dollar as a currency standard, that ain't going to happen. There's way too much that relies on America's fairly resilient economy even now. Let's see. I think that's all I wanted to talk about on this article. He does say down towards the bottom here that well, he says a few things that are spot on. I guess I should mention all. AI, artificial intelligence, will bring changes comparable to the printing press, the steam engine, electricity, computing, and the internet. In other words, it's a big deal, regardless of where you and I may think it's headed. I know in my case, I don't use it. I've used it a couple times. I watch others struggle to use it. I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of lawsuits over documents that got generated with AI that had mistakes in them. And it's the old adage, just because it's printed on a typewriter or a computer doesn't mean it's right. And boy, that's going to go triple for anything that was AI generated. The ability for fraud, just go on down the list. The cost will be enormous. And I'm not sure there is a way to assure that it's used in a great fashion. I know I've heard Elon Musk say that to him is the single biggest worry he has, is that artificial intelligence falls into the wrong hands. And I think without saying a whole lot more about that, he knows more about it than we do, and I would suggest it's possible that we've got military actions that are undertaken based on something that artificial intelligence suggested. He called the notion that oil and gas projects should be stopped naive. Boy, is that not the truth. Arguing that the best way to drop CO2 in the atmosphere is to replace coal with gas. And I'm not a scientist. That may be the best way. That also may not be the most economically sound way, although, again, he's a lot smarter than I am on issues such as this. He believes inflation may be stickier than markets, which are anticipating a soft landing and are currently predicting. And I would definitely agree. I think that's what we were mentioning earlier. In any event, okay, well, let's take our last break. We've just got a few minutes left when we come back, and we'll return momentarily with more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final few minutes here of the Be A Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we're going to leave the rest of my articles for Sunday's show. So we'll, for those of you that join us on Sunday, we'll talk more about a number of things that we didn't get through on either yesterday or today's show. But I wanted to talk about a syndication offering, and this is a project that's out on the realtymogul.com site. We're just going to be brief. I saw some pro forma information that I thought, you know, I'm not sure if they're smoking something or if this is just really that solid of a project. It's a medical health care facility, I believe, is probably the best way to describe it. And let's see, it's a development project. The first estimated distribution will occur 2026 is about the time, I believe, that it exits, because it's a two-year hold period. But the target, internal rate of return, again, target is somewhere between 26.2% and 28.2%. That's what caught my eye at first. And then, of course, you would expect it to be somewhat higher than normal just based on a two-year hold period. Now, that, you know, obviously assumes everything pretty much happens just right on the mark. But in any event, the equity multiple is healthy. It's about a 40 to 50% higher number than we might in the good old days hope to achieve. You know, the 0.0463 per month of the holding period per month would tend to indicate a 1.11 equity multiple would be what we think of as the gold standard. That's when you're doubling your money every 3.5 to 4 years. This target equity multiple is 1.6x. And, of course, you know, I don't see any discussion. It may be in this copious set of documents about what type of cap rate they're projecting or thinking they're going to achieve. They've got a target return on cost of 9.1%. That's, you know, an attractive number. They've got, the total development budget's roughly 33.5 million. Land acquisition and related costs, 5.5 million. This is in Jacksonville, so, you know, these are not cheap assets, and this is a Class A to boot. But in any event, they've got already in place triple net 15-year lease with publicly traded healthcare, with a publicly held traded healthcare operator. Lease guarantors have a net worth in excess of the project investment. So, you know, if there's some truth telling going on here, this seems to be a dynamite project. And again, the target internal rate of return is what caught my eye. But the more I read about this, I thought, you know, I personally don't have any funds in medical facilities. But if I, you know, saw this one come along and it was somewhat maybe a little bit closer than Florida, I might take a look at it. But, you know, it's a great location, hard corner of major commercial and residential corridors, sites accessible to 75% of the Jacksonville MSA population, can be there 30 minutes. So it's got a lot of positive. But I've got a few more minutes here. I had a few points I wanted to make on the business plan tab here. By the way, Realty Mogul is a nice site, the way they lay out their offerings, and they only allow accredited investors, and I don't want to get into definitions, etc., other than to say you can go to our website at baplannershow.com, and on the videos page I've got video about the most recent consideration that SEC staff has provided the commissioners to possibly raise the requirement for the accredited investor. And you can see the before and after if they were to do that. There's no guarantee they will. They often don't take those suggestions under consideration. But anyway, that'll explain it there if you'll go to beaplannershow.com resources. And then once you hover over the resources tab, you'll see videos, and that'll take you there. This group has developed and successfully sold many similar triple net and build-to-suit projects and have historically delivered excellent investor returns on triple net projects like this one. Let's see, they're going to have three phases coming on down. Hard costs, see, the land I mentioned earlier is $5.5 million. They've got another $22 million in hard cost, and then $2 million in soft cost, financing, and other costs. It's a $33 million investment, and unfortunately I don't have the metrics, the valuation metrics in my memory bank for medical complexes. If this were an apartment transaction, I could tell you instantly what class it is just based on price per square foot. They say, and this group sounds like there's somebody that knows what they're talking about, that it's a Class A facility, and in that area, that economic demographic has got to be perfectly suited, I would think, for that type of facility. Thus the reason they've already got it leased, basically, right? So, anyway, it's a... let's see, is it 900 square foot? Well, the construction debt is $25 million. No, it's more than 900 square foot. The debt works out to $895 a square foot. So I'm going to tell you right now, anybody starts talking to you about participating in a transaction that's got recourse debt and you're being asked to shoulder some of that, turn and walk away. There's no reason to do it. That's how I mentioned the early 80s in the Houston real estate scene, and that's what happened. All the developers were personally at risk, full recourse for those loans back then to do the types of commercial real estate that were being done. Let me look here. I was going to mention the... just the very off-the-top metrics. Target IRR is about 19%. The target average cash-on-cash is 2.1%. Now, it's just for 2 years. So an equity multiple of 1.41, which is, let me just check here, 1.41. Up at 24. Yeah, that's a pretty healthy equity multiple. But it's just a 2 year hold period. But anyway, it's good to see some of these transactions coming back into the market, and hopefully we can start talking about one or two on each show. And anyway, I hear the music's coming. We're at the end of the show. Thank you so much. We look forward to speaking to you on Sunday at 7 a.m.
And join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Ooh.